Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. On this episode, we share insider information on MLS Season Pass, how HBO Max did in its debut US men's game, what's going on in La Liga, insights from our meetings with Rebecca Lowe, the two Robbies and Tim Howard, and much, much more. My name is Christopher Harris, and I am joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, it was great to catch up again. We do this pod on a weekly basis. Obviously, we talk throughout the week sometimes, and you write articles for us, and you know, you've been a kind of a long-time contributor and senior writer. But it's not that often that we get to meet up in person, so... We had an Indian meal last week that was delicious. It was good to catch up in Orlando for the NBC Fan Fest.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, not only to catch up with you and renew acquaintances and compare notes and do all of that, but then to kind of get a feel for how NBC's coverage has changed over the course of 10 years. This is 10 years, and obviously we're seeing tangible changes in how they present the Premier League. And at times in the past, and I think justifiably so on this podcast, we've been critical of them being maybe too formulaic, maybe too static, but we're seeing progress. And I think some of the insight we got this past weekend, Chris, was that COVID coming when it did may have short-circuited some of these positive changes we've seen in the last two seasons, and particularly this season, from happening earlier. So that's something that maybe I would have been negligent in not factoring into my analysis of their coverage.
Yeah, a couple of key elements that we learned about. And Kartik has some two great articles at worldsoccertalk.com. One, which is the kind of interview with Rebecca Lowe, talking about it's been 10 years since NBC Sports coverage started for the Premier League, five more to go. What's her outlook for the future, as well as Kartik's interview with Tim Howard. Both of them are really good pieces. But some of the things I took away from these meetings that we had and discussions and interviews was the key word was baby steps. And I think it's one of those things that, in general, things can be formulaic, but they're continually trying to tweak things and trying to basically increase the amount of access and coverage that they have. So for anyone that's been watching the Premier League in the last few weeks, you probably would have seen a few things that we haven't seen in a long time. And a lot of those are post-match interviews with Chris Richards, Kepa, and many others, which is something with the NBC Sports microphone, ask them questions post-match. Other things as far as even just at halftime, as a player is walking off the pitch in that Brentford-Bournemouth game, having kind of a mic and hearing what they're saying in terms of their analysis, seeing the locker room or changing room or dressing room, whatever you want to call it, seeing some of the footage inside the Brentford stadium. So that was one of the things that kind of took away was baby steps, that they're continuing to see if they can get more access. And it's tough, right, Kartik? Because in many ways, I think that the Premier League doesn't want the sport to be Americanized completely, where it's like NFL or NBA. But it's cognizant of, you know what I mean, trying to find that balance between giving access but not going too far.
Yeah, and I think that is a tough balance, right? We talked about this last week on the pod, that I had my own concerns about that. And I think finding that balance is going to be tough for the league and for the broadcasters. And also, as I mentioned the last week, the issue of club TV channels. I think maybe Brentford is more apt to give that access, as we saw in that match against Brighton, than Manchester City or Arsenal would be, because they have club TV channels that are subscribed to by I presume millions of fans. We don't really know the numbers, but that access is a privilege of being a supporter, the way and is monetized at some of those clubs.
Yeah, and the other thing too, I think that we will see. I mean, it's happening already in terms of Peacock. Peacock allows us to actually get more coverage. So a halftime of a typical NBC Premier League game on NBC, or if it was on USA Network, is, you mean, basically a couple of minutes of talk, commercial, coming back for about maybe 30 to 90 seconds, back to a commercial. And with Peacock, we do have an opportunity to actually get more halftime coverage. And also the other part of this, too, is that I think we're going to get more and more kind of interviews with Peter Drury and Lee Dixon and Graeme Lasseau, kind of from the commentary gantry, leading into the coverage and even post-match. And I think it's great to tap and get the insight from Peter Drury and Graeme Lasseau and Lee Dixon. They're at the stadium. They're right there. They've seen it. And sometimes they see things differently than we do on television. Or they might see things that are happening off camera. And that's something I'm sure you too, Kartik, will always enjoy and take something from those observations and analysis.
Yeah, and I think this is part of the impact of NBC replacing Arlo White with Peter Drury. You've gone from, an okay guy, run-of-the-mill commentator to arguably the best commentator in the English language at this moment, it's certainly in English football, maybe in world football. So you've got a different kind of pair of eyes and the types of observations. And I really liked the segments we're seeing with him and Graeme Lasseau and him and Lee Dixon. There seems to be more to it than just kind of basic match facts that we were getting on those segments previously. So that's enhanced the coverage. And I think, obviously, in addition to that, the studio has worked well off of that. Now, the point you make, Chris, about Peacock versus USA and NBC is very, very pertinent because, again, I think a lot of the real positive improvements we're seeing from NBC's presentation are on Peacock matches. On linear, there are still limitations. I mean, in fact, there was one linear match recently that there was such a limitation that they got out of there right after the match, right? They went back to the studio for maybe 90 seconds, as you said, and then it was some other program. So a lot of I know people complain about streaming and having to pay, but this is one of the advantages of streaming.
Yeah, and then the other thing too, because we interviewed Pierre Moussa, who's the NBC Sports' top producer for the Premier League, and he was talking about for a post-match on Peacock, is there's no time constraints. So they can go as long as they need to. So if it's 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, if they want to, there's no other programming coming on right after it where they have to break away. So that if something major does happen, they've got that opportunity to keep on going until while it's still relevant and timely and still got something to add, and that's a huge plus of Peacock. We'll get into that in a little bit too, and I just want to mention too. So on the Fan Fest, Kartik wasn't able to make it on Saturday, but I went Saturday, and we did the interviews with NBC on Friday. But just a really fun experience again for me, and the part I like the most is talking to the soccer fans, and I was, Kartik, blown away by how much they know about their teams. So I ran into some guys, some supporters, and actually it was a guy, there was, I think, Matt, who's a Southampton supporter, and I was talking to him about the predicament that the team is in right now in terms of in that relegation battle. And just in talking to him for about 5 to 10 minutes, I was like, wow, this guy knows the club, he knows the managers, the players, knows what's going on. Not just that, but also Nathan Jones, as the Southampton manager, he was talking about the club he came from and the playing style that Luton has, and how that's been able to kind of, he's been watching Luton a lot to kind of get some analysis in terms of Southampton. And that's just one example. I mean, you saw so many fans from around the country there wearing different shirts, and you could tell it was a really eclectic mix of ages, genders, you name it, and a really fun experience. I'll definitely look forward to the next one. Now, Kartik, you mentioned the Peacock and talking about how much time they have. I'm not sure if you got the chance to watch the game on Wednesday night on HBO Max, US against Serbia. But it's really weird, though, because weird in a different, in a surreal way, not in a bad way. It's weird because HBO Max doesn't have commercials, so you have pre-match for USA against Serbia, you got halftime and post-match, and we're used to, as viewers, having commercial breaks. And not having those commercial breaks gives the broadcaster so much more time. So when it is pre-match and they're not having to break away to go to a commercial, you get more talking, you get more analysis, or basically more talk time. Same thing for halftime, same thing for post-match. Post-match, they have 30 minutes uninterrupted. And with Peacock, we don't get we do get TV commercials, but not as many. So I'm going to put it to you, Kartik. Did you get a chance to watch HBO Max? And what did you think in terms of how they were able to use the time that they had?
So quite frankly, I was so motivated by this match, I actually fell asleep before the kickoff time. That having been said, I did watch it Thursday morning. And a couple of observations. So the pregame was longer than I anticipated. And Kyle Martino was name dropping very early on. Right, I talked to Kobe Jones about this player. I talked to this one about that one. But I thought, you know, he and Luke were good. They were good calling the game. And Martino, as this is something I compliment, because you sometimes don't get this with Fox. Martino wanted to be able to represent, since this was a Serbian C team or something, right? There were no players from Serbia that were in the World Cup were on this side. He wanted to represent those players, right, and talk about those players. So he had done his homework very clearly on some of the Serbian players. So that's good. That I really like. Halftime was kind of interesting, wasn't it? You know, when you have the three of them standing up, Julie Foudy seems to be kind of facilitating the discussion. Yep. I think DeMarcus Measley made a lot of good points, but they were sort of long-winded points, right? I mean, maybe this is the byproduct of not having commercials, Chris, actually. Both at halftime and post-game, I think that there were maybe opportunities to break up the analysis and kind of the set-piece conversations, if you want to call them. I mean, I'm using a football term to describe broadcasting, but the conversations, which without commercials, there's no natural break, and maybe it got kind of long-winded. That's something I think that they'll work on as they get better, as they get more reps in. Also, did you notice that the mic flags that they were holding had both TNT and HBO Max on them, and a special and the U.S. Soccer Federation logo? So props to Warner Discovery. They've gone out and this may be a little thing that maybe only people like you and I know notice, Chris, but the mic flag to me is sometimes a because I've been in broadcasting myself, that conveys a level of seriousness or unseriousness to me. And I think that to me shows that this is an important product for the broadcaster, for Warner Discovery.
Yeah, it's early days, definitely. I mean, this is only, like, what, the third broadcast they've done. They did the two U.S. women's national team games in New Zealand, and then they did this one in L.A., and then they have the one this weekend against Colombia. I will give them props for a lot of the things in terms of actually being at the stadiums, being pitch side, really making an effort. They could have easily done this in a studio, but they didn't. They went out. They're trying different things, and they're not as aggressive as Bleacher Report was, or TNT for the Champions League, where they made some drastic changes. So this is something where they're trying, testing different things. Overall, though, it still feels low budget. It just feels like the production's not that good. There were audio issues with kind of when they had the team lineups showing kind of as they're talking through, and the music's too loud, but then Kyle's mic is too low, and then they turn the music down, but then you can't really hear Kyle that much. With DeMarcus, I agree 100% with you, Kartik. I'm a big fan of him as a player, but he is definitely, as an analyst, long-winded. And it's almost like you want Sarah Walsh to kind of step in and kind of break up the conversation and kind of move it along, or have Julie have a chance to talk, or just kind of mix it up a bit, because they have a lot of time. I don't feel that they're using that time really well. I mean, it's new, they're trying to get the chemistry going, but the amount of time that they have and the lack of really, really good insight or thoughts that come out of that, there's a big difference between the two. I mean, I'm not getting a lot of really good insight.
Yeah, at the risk of being called an ESPN fanboy again, I haven't watched Football Americas yet today as we record this on, what day is it, Thursday? I am sure when I tune into Sebi and Herc, I'm going to get more analysis than I did from HBO Max last night. So that's just the way it is, it seems, with everything. Like, regardless of who the broadcaster is, I'm still turning to ESPN's shoulder programs for analysis. So maybe that's just par for the course, or maybe that's just my personal preference.
Yeah, even ESPN and Fox, I'd say Fox too, in terms of production, and you switch on a US game and how it looks and the graphics and everything and the audio, that feels a lot more professional. I mean, not that the Turner Warner Brothers Discovery is not professional. It is professional. It's just that there's, I don't know if it's like a junior production team, or if they're still just learning on the job, or there's just like not as much attention to detail, or because it's so new that they just haven't aced it yet. So it's good. I like the attempts that they're making. It's just, I think it can be much improved. And the analysis, yeah, I think there's something missing there too, in terms of basically doing what the time that they have. I think they might be able to do some different segments. I like that they did a whole thing on Serbia, the insight there, and the high point for me, Kartik, was hearing and listening and watching Kyle Martino. Just a breath of fresh air to have him back. He's great on camera. He's making jokes. He's kind of doing the moonwalk. It's so good to have him back. And it's been a long, long time without him on U.S. television.
Yeah, it's been almost 3 years now, and we've missed him. I still think we miss him on Premier League coverage. So it's great to have him back. I agree. One last note on this broadcast. The production level was quite disturbing, and as you mentioned during the walkout, the new music, and then there was also some not so crisp transitions, even to when they went to Melissa Ortiz to give the interview with Anthony Hudson. And some of those things seemed very, I think maybe you used the term earlier, junior high-ish or high school-ish. I think those things get worked out with time. So I'm going to be a little more lenient. But yeah, there were some issues with the production. Although I have to say, again, even though I'm saying I'm going to watch Herc and Sebi to get some more analysis, the actual match analysis, I think, is better than what you get on Fox. And maybe that's a byproduct of having both Julie Foudy and Kyle Martino, who are two really good analysts of U.S. soccer on their broadcasts.
Yeah. The commentary was good. Wasn't perfect by any means, but I like what Luke Wallman and Kyle are doing. One more thing on this too, Kartik, is that pre-match they did something new, something different. They're trying something different again, nothing too radical, but they had an interview with Walker Zimmerman as he's doing his warm-ups, and there he is. He's been passing the ball back and forth. He's warming up, and they have a mic on him, so he's talking, and then they're asking him questions. But because he's constantly moving back, forth, pass, and he's talking at the same time, it just wasn't it was too distracting. Even because he kept on moving, and then also it was difficult to hear him clearly at times, because he's running, he's kind of jogging, he's concentrating on playing but trying to talk at the same time. I don't like that method or this idea. It just, like, if you're gonna grab 5 minutes with him before a game, do it before warm up, and just do something there where you can focus and he's not moving around the whole time. All right, Kartik, what else can we talk about? The Bundesliga. So I've watched quite a bit of Bundesliga the last week or so. Watched the Bayern-Cologne game with a lot of interest. It's just a fun league to watch. But I think in some ways, I think with Bayern stumbling a little bit and showing some vulnerabilities, it might make the Bundesliga title race between now and the end of the season more interesting than in previous years. What do you think?
Yeah, Bayern Eintracht is a massive match this weekend, 12:30 Eastern time on Saturday, ESPN Plus. Unfortunately, Chris, our friend and eminent voice of the Bundesliga, Derek Ray, has contracted COVID, so he will not be on the call for that match, which is really a pity because the title race is getting interesting. Eintracht played well in Europe, right? They're in the knockout stages of Champions League. They're one of the teams hunting Bayern down, trying to hunt Bayern down in the Bundesliga, and we're not going to have Derek for this match, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. But it'd be a good chance, though, to for us to hear some other commentators. I'm not sure who's going to be calling this game, but whether it's Phil Bonney or, I mean, there's a lot of good commentators there. I mean, Derek, of course, is one of the best, if not the best, in that league for sure. In terms of some of the other things happening, too, around the world of football, we'll get to MLS Season Pass in a few minutes in terms of just some of the things that we've been hearing from our sources. But one of the things that I think following up on this US-Serbia game, too, is that to me, probably one of the best things that could have happened to US soccer in the last few months is the whole scandal, the kind of the outrage, the kind of the war of words, so to speak, between Greg Berhalter and Gio Reyna. And this is a story that keeps on going, Kartik. This has been going on since, what, November. Here we are, almost in February. We're talking about it every single time that Gio Reyna steps on the pitch, every single time that he scores a winning goal, which has been two in the most recent games in Germany. Social media is still talking about it. And then we have... you're either in the Berhalter camp or the Reyna camp, and there's still a lot of discussion and kind of friction happening, and this story is not over by any means anytime yet. I think this is a good thing for US soccer. I think this is a good thing for soccer in the United States. I think in many ways this is kind of what Major League Soccer is missing, is a little bit of friction, a little bit of kind of controversy, really, where you kind of like dive deeper into things that are happening off the pitch. I mean, and you see this in NFL, you see this in college football, NBA, the Premier League is one of the greatest soap operas there is. Are you on the enjoying this this journey?
Yeah, no, they need this, and MLS doesn't have this. U.S. soccer generally doesn't have it. Carly Lloyd was very direct and, I think, to the point, accurate in her autobiography when she talked about how, you know, the sanitized image you see from U.S. soccer isn't real. Right, you generally see like this lovey-dovey image, and MLS is really insistent on that. Right, you know, they stifle controversy, they stifle personality. So it's funny, we're recording this 11 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday. Those of you who follow me on Twitter have just seen, as we began recording, me unleash a 7-tweet thread about Pep Guardiola and Pep's comments, which I had not seen, right? Because we were at the Fan Fest in Orlando when the Spurs Manchester City match took place. I went back to go look at clips from the Fan Fest to prepare for this podcast, actually, Chris. And one of the clips was Rebecca Lowe and Gary Cahill and the Robbies breaking down Pep's comments. So I'm like, okay, I got to watch this. So I watched Pep's comments in its entirety, and it's all about the things MLS. You know what you're saying. It's basically the stuff that U.S. soccer and MLS lacks. He's having a go at Manchester City supporters. He's having a go at his own team. He's saying we've let the standard slip. He's saying this is about passion. He's saying we were lucky to beat Spurs, right? Antonio Conte had his team organized and we were lucky to beat them, right? You know, we know how hard to play against them. It is. That sort of thing is not permitted in U.S. soccer and Major League Soccer normally, right? Or on the U.S. women's side, as Carly Lloyd alluded to in her book. That sort of outing of personality, that sort of creation of controversy by the most prominent people in the game, in this case, Pep Guardiola being one of the most prominent people in the world game, right? But the equivalent in U.S. soccer will never see these sorts of things. And if they do, they're brandished as pariahs. So I think this is really good to drive interest, and hopefully based on it and based on the interest it's driving, we'll see kind of a change in culture, even in how maybe MLS is broadcast on Apple TV, which is something I know you want to talk about.
Yeah, and that's something too, even from these games on HBO Max. I mean, it was last week was DeMarcus Beasley saying like, hey, I think that Berhalter has got to go. He's not going to be coming back. That's his thoughts. Then this week we had Kyle Martino saying like, hey, like, Greg's still in the race. He still could be the coach. Nothing's ruled out yet. And then we look at this weekend's game with USA against Colombia in a friendly too. And I'm sure there'll be some discussion in that game or post-match, pre-match or halftime about it. It does drive interest for sure. And that's something that I'm concerned about a little bit. So MLS Season Pass, I'm a big fan, especially for cord cutters. This is fantastic in order to be able to watch every single game with one subscription and not have to worry about blackouts, not have to worry about kickoff times, not have to worry about where to find those games. However, the talent that MLS is hiring to have on these games, so whether it's presenters, co-commentators, or the commentators, or analysts, all of them are going to be employed by Major League Soccer. So what does that do if something does controversial does happen in a game? Are they going to be, or something controversial that happens with Major League Soccer where MLS screws up and makes a wrong decision or basically makes a decision on something that's very controversial? Are we going to see really kind of that honest, transparent analysis and maybe criticism or discussion even about those things on Apple TV on this MLS Season Pass? I don't think so, Kartik. I think for the most part, I think they're going to be a lot of this talent is going to be a little bit kind of like, hey, maybe I shouldn't say anything in case that would put my job at risk.
Yeah, let's say MLS signs another player of Zlatan's personality and quality. Not many of those guys in the world, so I mean, there was only one Zlatan. But we know how that really pushed the comfort level and sort of made a lot of these people who want it as sanitized as possible, including in the media, very uncomfortable, the things Zlatan would say. What's going to happen now that you have Apple TV or MLS Season Pass and effectively commentators and co-commentators who are working for MLS analyzing that sort of commentary? Just think about Zlatan's comments a few years ago. I think it was 2018 about Major League Soccer, about Carlos Vela, among other things, and put that into the context of this era. Of broadcasting, I think that will be a problem.
Yeah, the other part of this too is that a lot of the talent that have been hired are on 1-year deals, so it's not like they got a 10-year contract with Apple and MLS to be, I mean, one of the commentators or co-commentators or analysts for the next 10 years, and now they're set. It's a 1-year deal for a lot of these guys, so they're on the hook, right? They have to do a good job. They have to, basically kind of follow the script, so to speak, in terms of, just basically provide good analysis, etc. So I think a lot of them will be a little bit gun-shy about being, saying anything too controversial. On the other hand, I think you'll get a lot of these guys, and it's already started already, on social media, talking about how MLS is one of the biggest, is probably the best league in the world, or talking, basically trying to promote MLS Season Pass. And it's early yet. I mean, it has MLS Season Pass doesn't launch until February 1st. The first game is February 25th. But I'm sure over the next few weeks, you'll see a lot of people that are going to be the talent really promoting and pushing, getting people to try to subscribe to MLS Season Pass, because they know that they need us. They need the subscribers. They need the soccer people to subscribe to the service in order for this to be successful. So what else, Kartik? What else in terms of MLS Season Pass? Because there's a lot. So in the last couple of weeks, you and I kind of have been talking offline. One of the things I keep on hearing quite often, and we mentioned this, I think you mentioned this specifically over a year ago, was in terms of how much work, and you having worked at other leagues in the United States, North American Soccer League is one example, how much work there is to produce games. And we have MLS with almost 30 teams, nationwide, two different countries, hiring all of this talent, brand new, starting something, basically almost starting its own TV network, so to speak. The word I keep on hearing from people within the business is overwhelmed. Overwhelming. It's just a huge, huge challenge to get this right. What are you hearing?
Yeah, it's overwhelming. And I said this when this deal was made on the podcast, that I know what USL went through. I know what we went through at NASL. I know how difficult the quality control is, how difficult it is to get consistency in leagues that are lower division leagues, but you want to convey some sort of product and some sort of consistent product with the same camera work in each place. It got to the point, Chris, where I know NASL did this, and I've been involved in some of these discussions at the team level and at the league level, where you start sending people to monitor the broadcast at every match, to monitor the camera work. You send someone on a plane to a match just to do that, because you have to have a certain level of consistency production-wise. And it takes months and months and months to train people to do this properly, to do it consistently. That's not even to mention the whole side of the commentary side and all of that. You have to make sure even things like the internet connections in certain grounds are up to level, and you have to test these things time and time again. Now, granted, MLS is at a higher level, right? They have newer stadiums. They have control of their stadiums for the most part. There's a couple teams that are an exception to that. But so that part might be easier, but it's still work. It's still something that takes many, many months to get right. In addition to the fact that you then have Apple TV, which I think the production level, the quality level of what they present is maybe even higher than your Amazon Primes and your Netflixes and your Disney Plus, Disney, ESPN, Hulu combination. So I think it's going to be very, very difficult. And yes, I'm hearing from my sources, like you have from yours, that they're overwhelmed. This has become much more complicated and difficult and cumbersome than they thought. And they literally, like every day, are scrambling. And I think the thing that is going to be, to me, a real tell is if we continue to have very little kind of information about how everything is going to look and feel once we get into February, right? They've given a February 1st date, Chris, in terms of launching the marketing. But if we're at February 10th, February 15th, and we still have some questions what February 25th is going to look like, then I think we're in for some real shocks, maybe in a bad way.
Yeah, I don't think this will be a disaster, but there's definitely going to be some. It's going to be rocky in the beginning. I think I'm sure just with anything, just like with HBO Max, there will be some things that they can improve upon. Some things probably going to be new and different. They're going to be great, but it is going to be a little bit bumpy in the beginning. But the question is, like, how long will people wait? You mean to give a little bit of patience? Will they wait, I mean, a week of broadcasting, and then think, okay, right, everything should be all good and running up now and working fine? Or will they give them a little bit more length of time? I mean, the pricing part of it too is, I mean, for the annual subscription is $100. So you want to get high quality with that. You expect high quality with a price point like that. Some of the things in terms of kind of what I'm hearing from my sources is that we know that IMG has taken over the production, and that's a good sign. That's a really good sign. Reason being is because in September or October, The Athletic reported about a producer that was brought in. This is before IMG. Producer was brought in to handle MLS Season Pass. After 6 days, he quit. So they lost that, and which is why I think in many ways that MLS has gone to IMG to have them do the production. And Kartik and I know how good IMG is in terms of production. I mean, listeners, you probably know in terms of watching Premier League productions and how smooth it is and how good it looks. However, that comes at a price. And MLS going to IMG is almost like kind of declaring like, hey, we can't do this ourselves. We need to go to an expert that's that has experience doing this. So that's a good move. It's just what that cost is in terms of something maybe that they weren't expecting initially. That is, I mean, we'll wait and see on that. The other thing I'm hearing too about commentators, and this is one of the big concerns about MLS fans losing their local regional sports network and their local broadcasters. So whether it was, I mean, JP Telecamera, even Joe Tolleson, you go down the list, he lost all of those local commentators. Some of them have been brought back to work with MLS Season Pass, but not all. However, what I'm hearing from one of my sources is that the commentators and talent will be going to the games, but they'll be focused on a regional basis. So if you're in the Pacific Northwest, as one example, and you're Keith Costigan and Jake Zivin and some of these guys that are doing those games in the Seattle, Portland area, you may be expected to cover the games, maybe some of the games in California, and in the Pacific Northwest, and maybe, I don't know, maybe Real Salt Lake, and you have your area, so you can focus on those teams, come up to speed on those teams. I mean, do everything you need to do so you're prepared, rather than at random being sent to some part of the United States or Canada to call a game and you not knowing as much about those teams as the local people do. So that's good news too.
Yeah, I think that's a very smart move, and that's the way it probably should be done. At USL, for those who aren't familiar with USL's model for USL productions, which airs on ESPN Plus, they centralize a lot of the announcers, but they're assigned to certain teams or to certain regions, just like this. So it's not so what you generally have is a similar sort of rotation. Sometimes people are assigned specifically to teams, even if they're calling matches or based in Fort Lauderdale, where USL Productions is based in Florida, they may be assigned to a team and they have to follow that team closely. So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, so here we are. It's at the end of January, the 1st of February, when they're launching MLS Season Passes next week. And there's very little information other than what we've known now for a few weeks. There hasn't been much additional information. There's a lot of questions that people have. So we will have a MLS Season Pass FAQ at worldsoccertalk.com that will go into a lot of detail, that will answer the questions, that will dig deeper into the concerns or issues or questions that you have, because this is a brand new thing. This is a huge thing for Major League Soccer and for Apple. And the success of MLS Season Pass, most of that is dependent on how many subscribers MLS gets. And I really hope that they make a big push on the advertising and marketing side to get the information out there. So whether it's, you know, advertising on sites, or whether it's doing some PR campaigns, or whatever it may take to get the information across to fans, because this is new. This is completely different than anything other than the Bundesliga with ESPN Plus. But the difference here with MLS Season Pass is that global nature, that global deal. And yes, some of those games will still be on television, about a 30-year season across Fox and FS1 and FS2, probably FS1 mostly. But for the most part, this is brand new. So it is a lot of change. And again, for cord cutters, I mean, there's a lot of questions that are coming up too. For example, if you want to subscribe to... Actually, I'll get into that in the listener mailbag. I think Ritik had a really good question, so we'll get to that in a little bit shortly. Kartik, anything else you want to mention that we haven't covered yet before we move on?
No, I think we've run the gamut of topics.
All righty. So that's what we know so far. We will continue digging for more information, doing the discussions and hard work to try to get the things across to you. I will mention one more thing, Kartik. I have a question for you, and feel free to answer as honestly as you always do. How much La Liga are you watching?
Less than I have in the past. I have a whole I mean, we could do a whole podcast. I could give you a whole laundry list of issues. Talking to people who know the league and Spanish fans of what's wrong with La Liga, whether and some of the mistakes Tebas has made. Obviously, the marketing, some of the issues with clubs like Valencia and the way Peter Lim has managed Valencia and made it into, you know, they're like wolves, right? George Mendes is staffing the club, right? And on and on and on. There were reasons why, there were multiple layers of reasons why La Liga is becoming less compelling. And quite honestly, the thing that I don't like in La Liga that I'm seeing also, Chris, is that because Simeone had so much success, you know, at one point you saw a lot of teams try and play fluid football. And I don't want the league to be like the Bundesliga where every team tries to copy the way Bayern plays and the way Klopp and Tuchel played at Dortmund, and that means the teams at the bottom are incredibly open, and you know, you never have matches where teams are sitting in low blocks, right? That's the problem with the Bundesliga, right? I mean, you have teams that always try and play their way out of trouble at the bottom of that league. But in La Liga, Chris, there are more and more teams that are playing the way Atleti play. Compared to in the past, from my perspective, and that has diminished my enjoyment as a viewer. And I think part of the reason that's happening is economic. It's not just, oh, well, Atletico had all this success in terms of winning trophies and coming close to winning even more trophies, right? Playing the way they did under Simeone, or they continue to play under Simeone. But so there's just a number of factors, and maybe this is something for a special show or one of our episodes, because there's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, I mention it for a reason, because I mean, the Bundesliga always gets kind of criticized for being a one-team league. However, this season, I mean, whether it's RB Leipzig or Freiburg or Frankfurt, there definitely are a strong contingent of teams beneath that that are challenging, that could topple that monopoly. But to me, La Liga, I mean, really is a two-team league. And yes, Real Sociedad is doing well. But I probably watched this season probably less of La Liga than I have on a per-season basis than in the last, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years. And yes, I enjoyed El Clasico, the Spanish Supercopa final. However, I just find the league really boring. And so whether it's like, so you turn on ESPN FC and the first like 10 minutes of it is talking about La Liga and what's happening, and just even the interviews are so boring. Just the managers, the talent, Xavi, fantastic player, fantastic manager, just really boring to listen to.
Which is really odd, because if you read his columns when he was out of management, between his playing stint and his management stint, he was taking on tough topics a lot. Even to the point where, I mean, he said something about Spurs and Pochettino, and Pochettino addressed it in the media saying, well, Xavi's Barcelona, he's my enemy because I'm Espanol, right? Pochettino. So he was kind of cut, and he would push it like in his analysis of stuff as a writer, which is why as a coach he's become just very, very, very milquetoast, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. It's when I watch it, and I watch and listen to the ESPN FC analysis, which I appreciate. It's just I just don't think that it's that exciting. It's just that most of the talent is not going to Spain like they did in the past. Most of the top managers are not in Spain like they were in the past. And Real Madrid's really not that great side this season. I mean, a lot of holes in that kind of a slow, tired, older side. Barcelona even is inconsistent and not looking that good either. I think it's just really a bad time. But to me, it's also the coverage by ESPN. It's just that Luis Garcia, and then the female presenter that they have, or the female
Jenna Soler,
well, pitchside reporter, the one that does all of the interviews,
just really
boring. I don't know. I watch it, I listen to it, I hear it, and I'm like, this is so boring. I mean, this is coming from me, a big fan of La Liga in the past. It's not a good time for La Liga right now.
Let me address something else on this. So Javier Tebas made it it kind of implied time and again that La Liga needed to have the best players, right? You were watching because of the players, blah, 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 blah. Now, La Liga doesn't have the best players. Many would argue, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona fans in particular would say, well, it's because Tebas has pushed, you know, his kind of ideological view of how football should be structured. And so now you have a situation where La Liga has a hard time selling itself around its clubs and around its atmospheres and around its supporters because they had made such a big marketing push around having the best players in the past. So that's another element of this. Like I said, we could do a whole show on this. I've got a lot of thoughts on this, and I'm just scratching the surface. But that's another thing to consider. You can still market the Bundesliga without the best players. Lewandowski can leave, and you can still market the Bundesliga, right? Because it's about the atmospheres. It's about the culture around German football and German culture in general. La Liga has put themselves in a position where you can't market the league unless they have the very best players. And that is actually the fault of Tebas more than it is the fault of Florentino Perez or Laporta or Bartomeu or whoever else is going to get blamed.
Yeah, and it's kind of going towards where, you mean, I think the Super League idea may happen at some point, because I think all the other leagues probably say, like, hey, we just can't compete with the money that the Premier League is making and spending, and we have to kind of basically partner together, whether it's I can't see the Bundesliga doing it, but maybe it's the French league, the Spanish league, and
well, well,
Italian
these
league.
These leagues are losing their supporters now. I think France might be in a different position because I think France is getting the sort of investment. I've actually been impressed by some of the club purchases, some of the investment in Liga in the last year, Chris. Maybe that's again another topic for another time. Yeah, a lot of Americans, a lot of guys who have money, a lot of guys who see potential in the league. Spain and Italy, and Andrea Agnelli says a lot of things that I think are ridiculous. He also says a lot of things that are very accurate. And I think when he speaks about young people not being interested in football, and that was one of his justifications for partnering with Perez and the others for the Super League, I think that's a very real point in Italy and Spain. I think that is a very, and it's where England was in the 1980s, by the way. I mean, Chris, you lived through that.
Yep.
So I do think that there's some valid points, and I don't know if Tebas recognizes that. So that's an ultimate problem for La Liga.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of those things that I could see that. I could see that in terms of, I mean, but that's something that Gianni Infantino says quite often in terms of and that's why he says, okay, we need the FIFA Club World Cup because we're losing the younger fans. Do we need something that's more exciting, that's going to bring all these the best teams from around the world into a FIFA tournament, of course, played, you mean, let's go ahead and have 40 teams, 48 teams, whatever it may make it. And oftentimes it's based on, like, hey, we're losing that younger soccer fan, we're using the audience really for the future. So I think sometimes it can be true, but other times it can be something where it's used to for their own gains.
Yeah, to put a wrap on this, I think that this is something, Chris, where we could say MLS, whether Apple season pass, MLS season pass works or not, where they recognize that they have to engage and keep young fans.
Yeah.
In a way that La Liga and Serie A, I mean, Serie A, we were criticizing La Liga, but we could have La Liga, the criticisms are tame compared to what I can say about Serie A and the direction they've gone recently. But I think maybe to Garber's credit, and to Mark Abbott's credit and everybody at MLS, they recognize this is a problem in certain European countries, in southern European countries in particular, and let's not allow that to happen here.
Yeah, I think it's more the marketing rather than Don Garber and Mark Abbott. I think it's more in terms of the marketing and how they market MLS and appeal directly to that younger audience than it is, say, Garber or Abbott in terms of the decisions that they make. But yeah, MLS for sure does a really good job of targeting a younger audience. Absolutely. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. Speaking of Major League Soccer, Jaime has a question. Jaime Garcia has a question about MLS season pass. He says, very interesting to see how many games the non-subscribers and Apple TV subscribers will be able to watch. Do you have any details? Maybe the free part will make Major League Soccer more popular, but the $14.99 does not. It does look very expensive. Yeah, so for this season, the 2023 season, approximately 43% of the games will be available for free. So those could be available for free within the Apple TV app, which is great. I mean, because you want to sample MLS Season Pass. In some ways, you want to see what it's like, right, before you go ahead and subscribe to it. So the best way to do that is show games for free, a bunch of games for free, get you hooked on this MLS season, and then you're sold, right? Then you say, okay, $14.99 based on what I'm getting in terms of all the additional coverage and shoulder programming and whip around shows, you name it, right? There's a long list of stuff that they're getting. Maybe then that $14.99 does, it looks maybe not so bad in terms of pricing. Maybe in terms of the value there's an opportunity to kind of show that and prove that. So yeah, a bunch of, almost half of the games will be available for free, which is fantastic too, which will help get people kind of over the hump in terms of being worried about trying to get MLS Season Pass working on their phone or TV or smart TV or computer or iPad, whatever it may be. Leo says the MLS Season Pass starts on February 1st, while the season itself starts on February 25th. I wonder what fans should expect in the period between the 1st and 25th of February. And Leo, that's a great question because we don't know. There's been so little information. We talked before about Major League Soccer on the public relations side, and that they really needed to do a really good job of getting the information across and out there to everyone about, once February 1st launches, like, you know, what's included, what can we look forward to, what can we expect? And I'm sure that some of the there will be content there. There will be things there to bring people in. But it does seem to be like a very last minute. They're just scrambling, like you mentioned, Kartik, trying to get everything ready in time. And February 1st, they may not have everything ready in time. They may still be scrambling before that February 25th launch date of the games themselves. Ritik says, it's very disappointing that Apple TV won't offer any less expensive package for MLS fans who are only interested in watching their club. I'm a diehard DC United fan, but other than watching other MLS games or MLS teams in CONCACAF Champions League and most playoff matches, I don't have much time or interest in watching non-DC United regular season games. I hope they will consider adding that option in the future, as it's a perfect way to increase subscriptions. And I'll pause there, Kartik, because there's some good points there by Ritik. And I think that is the big difference. That's one of the big differences about this MLS Season Pass, is it's all teams. So, and most fans of MLS clubs are not interested in watching other teams in the league, unless it's a big, a big game or something controversial or something. So, and there are no plans to offer a subscription package just to that one team, whoever you support. I guess they're looking at it too as far as the season ticket holders. Season ticket holders will get access to MLS Season Pass for free, in quotation marks. It's included in the price of the season ticket. And then you can watch, in this example, DC United games and not have to worry about watching any of the other games. So I guess that comes up back to the pricing too, Kartik, is that, okay, $14.99 a month, right, is one of the more expensive streaming services for soccer, if not the most expensive. However, if you're only interested in one team, and that team might play, depending on scheduling and stuff like that, maybe, I don't know, two games a month sometimes, maybe three, maybe a little bit more, depending on what's happening, that's, for some people, it's going to be a difficult question to, whether to sign up or not.
Yeah, and so because they're not offering those individual team packages, I think that they're going to lose subscribers. I don't know what the balance is, though. They have to determine that, because maybe they think most people who are interested in individual team packages are buying season tickets. Now, we see that with some clubs, and we don't see it with some others. So that's another thing, right? In some markets, the bulk of the fan base and the people who would watch the matches on the RSNs were buying season tickets. That's the case. That was the case with the LA Galaxy. That was the case with Philly Union. I could tell you, like in the case of Real Salt Lake and Sporting Kansas City, they had much higher numbers. And I think there's some other examples too. I'm just giving some random examples that I know about. There were much higher numbers for people watching away matches in on regional on their local regional their local RSNs or in Salt Lake's cases case for many years they had their away matches on linear television locally than were going to the games. So you're potentially disenfranchising a lot of people in some markets, whereas in other markets maybe it doesn't make any difference. So that's another thing MLS will have to figure out.
We're in a weird place with Major League Soccer right now, because in the past there was always those big names, and those big names, the thinking was those big names would make people watch the league or get them interested in watching games. So whether it's Pirlo, I mean Gerrard, Lampard, Zlatan, as you mentioned before, Carlos Vela to a certain extent when he did join the league, Chicharito to a certain extent when he joined, you go through the history of Major League Soccer. There's been so many big names that the hope was that that would pull viewers in. Where we're at now, I'm having a hard job trying to think of, like, who's the biggest name in Major League Soccer right now? Who's the big name that's going to pull people in? So we're on the opposite side of the spectrum now, where it's all about the teams. It's all about having the team chemistry. A Philadelphia Union is one example. Not major stars, but a good team ethic, playing decent football, actually good football under Jim Curtin, well organized, and which is great if you're a Philadelphia Union fan. But if you're a neutral, or if you're somebody outside of a city that has a Major League Soccer team, what's going to pull you in? What's going to make you subscribe?
That's a great question. I mean, Insigne is in the league. That's the only. Who else? I don't know. And this is interesting because around 2015, MLS had the strategy to try and collect as many pieces, lucrative pieces as they could. In addition to the names you mentioned, David Villa, Didier Drogba, Alessandro Nesta, there were big, big names who came to MLS. To the point where at one point I said, and this was completely misunderstood, and Premier League fans got very defensive and angry at me. I said there were more high-profile, big-name players right now in Major League Soccer than there are in the Premier League. And that was a time when the highest-profile Premier League players were guys like Eden Hazard. I can't even think. That period, there was a period. It coincides with Leicester winning the league also. So there was a dip in star quality coming out of the Premier League, not necessarily in the overall quality of the league. But it was a period before Manchester City had gone and gotten Kevin De Bruyne, et cetera. Luis Suarez had just left the league, right, and gone to Barcelona. So there was a period where I was saying, MLS, they've got at least the names. And it coincided with them doing a new TV deal, an eight-year TV deal. This time, as they launch a new TV deal, I gave you one name, Insigne. I can't think of any other players, at least that I think of as world class that are in MLS. Mm-hmm. Can you seems to be the only guy I can think of.
Yeah, the only one I can think of, and again too, it's a player that you and I I'm sure appreciate, and many of our listeners do, but it's not going to be one of those names that you scream from the rooftops, is Pozuelo. Who's a great player, just a really fantastic midfielder that makes a difference. But and that's the thing, though, too, that MLS, there's always names mentioned in the press. Of course, Messi is one example. But other names, that are mentioned, Busquets, Giroud, Liao, all these players. However, will they eventually make it to MLS, or will they make it to MLS this year? I think MLS is in a stage right now where they need that big signing. They need someone. They need someone to draw in that audience. For this launch in February, and right now I don't feel it.
I'm not going to say who it is, but someone mentioned Leao coming to MLS to me, and I laughed because, I mean, if MLS did that, great. That's a statement signing. Of all the statement signings the league's ever made, that would be the statement signing. Rafael Leao, for those of you who don't watch Serie A and watch him at Milan, I think is maybe the best player in that league when he's on, but it's never going to happen. So I think there's become also this thing now with MLS where people who support the league or connected to the league starts throwing names like that name out and some of the other names you mentioned. And knowing that it's probably unrealistic that any of these guys come, but they still have to register MLS as a player in the transfer market to gin up interest.
One more thing about this too, Kartik, is that I know you're a big fan of the USMNT audience and fan base, but that crowd is probably not watching MLS that much. They're watching, you know, Juventus, they're watching Champions League, maybe a little bit of Premier League, or Leeds United, or you mean they're watching Valencia. That they're choosing teams based on USMNT players, and most of the major stars are in Europe. So MLS definitely has a big issue that they need to resolve. I'm sure behind the scenes they're working on it. But we need something. We need something to really kind of. I mean, maybe it's Messi, and that's quite possible. At some point.
That's driving the conversation. You're right. The USMNT thing, because I've even noticed the last 2 weeks the interest in Crystal Palace spiking because Chris Richards is starting now, has worked into that team under Patrick Vieira. So, yeah, I think you're right. USMNT fans are focused on Dortmund. They're focused on Juventus and Valencia and Crystal Palace and Leeds and wherever U.S. players are playing. And then looking at, some of the top teams in Europe and trying to speculate as to, you know, where Americans could move. So, it's a problem for MLS. Who's the highest profile MLS guy now in the U.S. men's national team? I mean, who do you market around if you're MLS in that case?
Yeah, maybe Walker Zimmerman or even Kellen Acosta or I don't know. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It's really tough. So, and that's the thing that you and I have privately discussed this. I'm not sure if we've mentioned it on the podcast before, but the audience for USMNT is very different than Major League Soccer. And actually, a lot of them don't like each other. The MLS people don't like the USMNT crowd for many different reasons, some of them social and political, and vice versa. So they operate in two different kind of circles. And there is some overlap, but it's a different audience. So, yeah, Ritik goes on to say, a pleasant surprise from this past weekend was two over-the-air Premier League matches on NBC. I noticed it'll continue during the match week on February 4th and 5th. Should we expect this to be the norm moving forward? And that's a great point, too, because we didn't mention until now the viewership for that Arsenal-Manchester United match, which was on NBC on a Sunday, which was rare, as well as Peacock and Telemundo. And then collectively combining that audience across those three different areas was 2.3 million people, which is the biggest, most watched Premier League game of all time in the United States. And a lot of that comes from Arsenal fans, huge fan base. A lot of that comes from Manchester United, huge fan base. And both of those teams have not done so well in the last few years. And now there's that resurgence. So they're interested. And the neutrals are hooked on it. It was a great game. Probably one of the games of the season. I mean, so I think NBC will look at that and say, like, hey, there might be a couple of weekends coming up with NFL where there's buys, where they might not have any games going on NFL. And there could be some big opportunities for those big games to have on Sundays, which we might see big numbers again.
Let me mention something real quickly, Chris. They have not had a season yet, NBC, in 10 years. This will be the first time that Arsenal and Manchester United, who historically have two of the three largest fan bases in the United States. You could say now that there's a lot of Spurs fans and Chelsea fans and Man City fans, whatever. But historically, those have been two of the three. They have not had a season where those two have been in contention for a title yet. So I think you're going to see numbers begin to spike. I'm not surprised by that number at all. I think it's not just reflective of the growth in the popularity of the league and NBC's promotion. I think it's a reflection of the how those two sides are playing and how excited their fans are. I'm shocked because I know a lot of Man United fans, and Man United fans are even when they were second under Jose, and there was a year they were second under Solskjaer. They may finish third or fourth this year under Ten Hag, but they feel like it feels different, right? It feels like they now have the manager finally after 10 years of shuffling through guys and no identity at the club. They finally have that guy who's going to move the club along long term. So yeah. I think this is just the start of something for NBC in terms of ratings.
That's a fantastic point, Kartik. Really, really great point there, because for the most part, you look at like the last 10 years in terms of the Premier League, which team has won the Premier League title the most, roughly?
Must be Manchester City, right?
Exactly. And that fan base is still, it's growing. It is growing. I'm seeing differences in the last probably 1 to 2 seasons in terms of that fan base growing in the US. But relatively speaking, compared to the other teams, it's a much smaller fan base than Arsenal, Manchester United, Chelsea, and Tottenham, and probably a couple of other teams too. You mean like an Everton fan base might be, or Fulham might have more fans than Manchester City fans. No offense, Kartik, but and we see this too from the website in terms of the amount of traffic coming to the website for TV schedules or articles, how much of an interest there is on each individual team, each individual league. So it gives us a good sense of kind of how much demand there is out there.
I'll tell you this. I mean, this Vox Media had their layoffs of SB Nation writers this past week. When I managed the Manchester City site for SB Nation almost a decade ago, so the beginning of the NBC period, but after Manchester City had already won a couple titles, Pellegrini was the manager, we had less hits from the U.S. than the Sunderland site. So, Manchester City is not does not have that fan base. It's building in the United States. I know, because at one time I was one of the few City fans in this country before the takeover. So that has not helped NBC. And as I do the quick math in my head, Chris, it's 5 of the 9 previous seasons NBC has had the Premier League. Manchester City has won it 5 times. So that's actually a majority. It's not just they've won them more than anyone else. That's an outright majority of the years that NBC has covered the Premier League. Manchester City has won it. Okay, so 2 of those years, Liverpool ran them real close. So that helps NBC because Liverpool is one of those sides.
Right.
But Arsenal and Man United have not run City or whoever won the title close in any of those 9 years.
And for fans of English soccer clubs in the United States, Americans, if you grew up in the 80s or 90s or the kind of early 2000s, chances are if you became a soccer fan, it was more likely that you'd be an Arsenal or Manchester United fan, because both of those teams, it was the two biggest teams in England, always fighting to try to win the title season after season, some legendary stars on both teams. And that fan base is still here. I mean, and it's growing. So, yeah, NBC is going to have, if this continues, great points, Kartik. This is going to be a major year for them.
Yeah, throughout the history of English football, I get into a lot of trouble for saying this, Chris, so maybe I shouldn't. Liverpool and Man United fans get very angry when I say it. But throughout the history of English football, if you start in the 1920s, no club has been as consistently strong in contending for league titles over that 100-year period as Arsenal has been. Even though they've won less titles, far less titles than Liverpool or United, those titles have tended to come in bunches for those clubs. So Arsenal not competing for a title the last decade is a pretty big deal in the historic trajectory of English football. So it's good to have them back, and I think it's important for the league and for NBC as they get viewership, as they try and increase viewership, to have Arsenal back.
All right, 2 more comments to go. Next up is Dave. He wants to talk about Peacock and U.S. Women's National Team. He says, Peacock did a great job last week with the U.S. Women's National Team game against New Zealand. It was clearly pulled together last minute and called off a monitor, but I have rarely seen a women's friendly get such high-profile treatment in Spanish. Telemundo seemed excited about being the new Spanish home for U.S. soccer coverage, encouraging start. And I watched a little bit of Telemundo's coverage on Wednesday of the U.S.-Serbia game. And Telemundo's doing a great job. I mean, the sound mix is better. It seems more professional. It's on Peacock. It's in Spanish. Andres Cantos commentating. It felt more exciting. I mean, it felt like something I'm used to more often. And yes, HBO Max and Warner Brothers did a good job too. But Peacock's definitely doing great on the Spanish side. Last but not least, Chris has a question about the CW. Even though this really isn't soccer-related, LIV Golf is on the verge. Actually, it's already signed of a TV deal with the CW, which is a over-the-air network owned by the Nexstar Group. The president of the network has said in recent interviews that they are actively pursuing sports rights such as IndyCar, Pac-12 college football, basketball, and, importantly for us soccer fans, the NWSL. With this in mind, my question to the both of you is, do you see the CW as a player for soccer rights going forward?
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of CW affiliates, Chris, that had soccer rights through the years because they were MLS, they had regional sports networks that had MLS rights. So and they would show some of those over the air on the CW channel. In fact, I think the CW channel in Orlando had Orlando City for a few seasons, their away games. So or some of their away games, not the entire package. Some of it was on the RSN, some of it was on the CW. So yeah, I think maybe this their programming holes now that they need to fill for their local affiliates in bigger cities because of the Apple TV deal. This is part of the knock-on effect that Chris and I have talked about. Christopher Harris, not Chris, who's written us about the knock-on effect of the Apple TV deal. And I think one of them, maybe the CW needs to fill some programming holes, and they would go after soccer rights like they've gone after Liv, and like they are talking about the Pac-12 in particular. I've heard connected to them because the Pac-12 now is kind of on the outside of the of the sphere in terms of TV deals with college conferences. Right, we're seeing the ACC's locked into ESPN, Big Ten is locked into Fox, Big 12, a lot of activity there. SEC, we know the situation with them and ESPN. So I think it could be interesting. They could be a player, but I think they'll be a player for second-tier properties. They're not the CW network is not going to grab the La Liga rights in the future or MLS rights or anything like that.
Yeah, so my wife and one of my daughters loves the CW. They watch it quite often, whether it's, I don't know, Riverdale or The Flash or Stargirl, et cetera, et cetera. So they watch a lot of it. What I'm hearing, though, Kartik, is that even though the CW has Live Golf, a lot of the CW affiliates will probably, a lot of them won't show the sports. It's up to each individual affiliate. So, like, for example, with the Arsenal-Manchester United game, recently, last weekend on NBC, probably, I mean, 99% of the NBC stations available nationwide showed the game. Not every single one does. The CW, if they showed, whichever game it would be against whoever, say it's an NWSL game, there's no guarantee that that game would actually be available.
Yeah. Chris, so this is an important point that I think a lot of younger viewers may not understand. Historically, NBC and CBS have had better relationships with their affiliate stations than Fox or any other network, the CW. And ABC is somewhere in the middle. I know Disney has really worked on a lot of the ABC affiliate stations, but ABC is in many ways kind of the third network, right? CBS and NBC have really strong relationships with their affiliates, carefully chosen affiliates in every market. Both those networks have gone and bought stations, local stations in important markets for them. ABC has done a little less of that. This is something to remember when we're talking about over the air and games being on over the air networks. You're much more likely, if a game is on CBS, like the NWSL games that have been on CBS, although I guess you had an issue with that in Jacksonville, yeah. You told me. So that's an exception. Although I have to say, CBS changed affiliates in Jacksonville. That they weren't used to be on Channel 4, and when they changed to 47 in the Jacksonville market, there were some issues with preemptions. But you're much more likely to see an NWSL matchup on your local CBS affiliate than you are to see an MLS matchup on your local Fox affiliate for this reason, with Jacksonville as an exception, obviously.
Excellent. Well, great. Kartik, thank you for the insights and great content this week from everyone and listeners. Thank you for your questions. We were able to talk quite a bit about those topics. If you have any questions that you want us to talk about, relevant to soccer, television streaming, production, MLS season pass, etc., we'd love to get your thoughts and we'd love to read those out on air. You can reach us a bunch of different ways. One is the website, worldsoccertalk.com. Click on podcasts and then leave your comments in the most recent episode. You can email us web@worldsoccertalk.com. Facebook is Facebook. facebook.com/WorldSoccerTalk. You can post a message there. You can tweet us at World Soccer Talk, or you can leave a voicemail for us at 561-247-4625. Kartik, before we go, a shout out for Beyond the 90.
Yeah, for those of you looking for more insight and kind of more edgy content from me and from some other writers, check us out at beyondthe90.substack.com. We have free subscriptions and paid subscriptions. The free subscription will get you all of the Florida soccer content. So if you're a local in Florida and just want the Florida stuff that I'm producing for that site, the free subscription will get you that. The paid subscription will get you more Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga stuff.
Excellent. Great. All right. So heading into another weekend of football from around the world, what are you going to do and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.